Imagine a country builds, like, over 1 million homes for its poorest citizens. On paper, it's an absolute triumph,
Right,
right?
a total success story.
Exactly. But somehow, the housing crisis actually accelerates. So welcome to today's deep dive into the Breaking New Ground document. It's this massive policy framework for South African housing development. And, okay, let's unpack this. The document tackles a pretty wild paradox.
It really does.
Yeah, like how an aggressive construction boom still fell behind, and how the authors propose shifting from just throwing up mere shelters to engineering, wealth-generating sustainable human settlement.
Right, because the sheer scale of the initial rollout outlined in the document is, well, it's staggering. I mean, over 10 years, the government poured R29.5 billion into providing 1.6 million housing opportunities.
Wow, that is a lot of money.
Yeah, it's massive. Yet, the authors note the backlog of inadequate housing actually ballooned to 1.8 million. And what's fascinating here is how the document identifies demographic velocity entirely swallowing that construction volume.
Swallowing it whole.
Exactly. Between 1996 and 2001, average household sizes shrank from 4.5 down to 3.8 people. And you compound that with rapid urbanization.
So the underlying math of the population just shifted completely.
Yeah, pretty much overnight.
It's like running on a treadmill that suddenly tilts into an uphill sprint. Like you're putting in the work, but you're falling behind because the fundamental rules of the game changed right under your feet.
That's a great way to put it.
The document shows the government was just trying to build its way out of a demographic avalanche, basically.
Which brings us to the core financial flaw they highlight. Because the priority was, hitting those high volume targets, these initial homes were pushed out to the cheap urban periphery.
Far away from everything.
Right. And the authors argue this spatial isolation trapped people in a what they call a second economy slump.
And to be clear on that term for you listening, a second economy slump means you have a physical roof, sure, but the asset is dead in the water.
Exactly. It doesn't do anything for you financially.
Right. You can't leverage it for a formal bank loan, you can't build equity, and you're essentially locked out of the mainstream financial system.
And that's the exact trap Breaking New Ground tries to dismantle. The framework targets what they call the missing middle. So households earning between R3,500 and R7,000 a month.
Okay, so people who make a bit too much to get total subsidies, but not enough for a normal mortgage.
Exactly right. So to bridge the gap, the policy proposes a credit and savings-linked subsidy. Mechanically, this means the government pairs with financial institutions to match a household's personal savings.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, it effectively manufactures the down payment they need to finally unlock a formal bank loan.
That's a really clever way to bridge the gap.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets really interesting and, well, a bit baffling. The document proposes reducing the legal ban on selling a government-subsidized property from 8 years down to 5 years. Wait, so the government originally banned people from selling their own homes for 8 years?
Yeah, they did.
How does freezing an asset help someone build wealth? And honestly, doesn't a 5-year ban still freeze the asset?
Well, it's a messy compromise, honestly. The document notes the original 8-year ban was a defensive move against downward rating.
Downward rating.
Yeah, it's the fear that vulnerable beneficiaries would be pressured into selling their new homes for pennies by predatory buyers.
Oh, I see.
Exactly. But the policy authors admit this defense mechanism unintentionally paralyzed housing mobility.
Right, because you literally can't move.
Yeah. So by dropping it to 5 years, they are attempting to thread the needle. They want to give the asset a brief incubation period to stabilize the owner, but open the door sooner so a healthy secondary property market can actually breathe.
Meaning allowing people to trade up or move for
Yeah,
work.
exactly.
I mean, that tension between protecting an asset and letting a market function naturally is a universal urban planning headache. But even if you unfreeze the financial rules, a house is useless if the neighborhood itself is an economic desert.
Right. And the document tackles that spatial reality head on. It signals a hard pivot in how the government treats informal settlements.
Which is the big
It's a
deal.
huge deal. Instead of the historical approach of, conflict or neglect, the authors propose integration and cooperation through an in-situ or on-site upgrading process.
Meaning they advocate upgrading the settlements right where they already exist, And the plan doesn't just call for sturdier walls.
No, it goes way beyond that.
Right. It proposes funding multi-purpose clusters. We're talking about bundling housing with clinics, parks, and taxi ranks to create medium-density spaces.
Yeah.
The logic there is crucial. Like, if you bundle a taxi rank and a clinic near housing, you instantly create a localized microeconomy.
Exactly. The circulation of money changes entirely.
Yeah, people aren't spending half their daily wages commuting, and small businesses have immediate foot traffic.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, upgrading in situ with those clusters is vital for social cohesion. The document recognizes that relocating people to shiny new suburbs miles away usually severs their fragile economic lifelines and community networks.
It destroys the village to save it, kind of thing.
Right. Upgrading on-site preserves the invisible social infrastructure that keeps a community alive.
It's treating the city as an organism, not just a spreadsheet of roofs. So what does this all mean? Ultimately, breaking new ground outlines a radical evolution.
It really does.
It advocates for the government to stop acting merely as a mass home builder and start acting as a facilitator of complex, integrated urban ecosystems.
Because it argues that a house is just a structure, right? But a settlement is a living community. The true value of a physical asset is dictated by the infrastructure, the market mobility, and the social networks surrounding it.
Which leaves you with something fascinating to ponder. If a physical house is only as valuable as the surrounding physical community and local economy, how might the current rise of remote work and digital infrastructure completely redefine what makes a location valuable for future housing policies? Something to think about as you step off the treadmill today.